Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. Graham Usher joins us from Islamabad, Pakistan, where he's a freelance journalist and writer working for Al Ahram Weekly, as well as Middle East Report, Marip.org, and other publications. Graham Usher also reports for National Public Radio. As we reached Graham Usher early Monday morning, he explained that he was just getting reports about Pakistani forces firing at U.S. aircraft, and that Afghan consul Abdul Khalik Farhi was kidnapped by armed gunmen, his driver dying in the attack. Graham Usher, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This bombing in Islamabad, the Marriott Hotel destroyed, are you seeing a lot of military presence in the streets of Pakistan, perhaps even U.S. military?
No, I think the aftermath of the bombing of the Marriott Hotel is really much more one of mood. The government has said it's going to tighten security in Islamabad. In fact, today there's meant to be a high-powered meeting of various security and military officials to recommend greater security provision in the capital. But I think generally speaking, there is a mood of fear in Islamabad and powerlessness. Islamabad really is not used to what we saw on Saturday night. It's not used to that scale of carnage. The 53 people were killed in the blast of the hotel. 266 people were injured. The most prestigious hotel in the capital, the Marriott, was basically reduced to a smoldering wreck. And it really, I think, genuinely shocked people, both locals, Pakistanis, and foreigners alike. So I think really there's a sense of fear that the war that really has been raging for the last year or so, mostly on the Pakistan-Afghan border, has now migrated eastward and engulfed the federal capital.
Now, how far from North Waziristan, where you've been writing about U.S. ground forces crossing in to this region, special forces and also airstrikes, how far away from Islamabad is this?
The front line in Pakistan is very fluid and changeable. The bulk of the fighting is on the border tribal areas between Pakistan and Afghanistan. In the last month or so, there's been a major military operation in the Bajur tribal agency. Something like 700 people have been killed. 300,000 tribesmen and their families have been displaced. So that is where the main front line is. But it can also erupt inside the Northwest Frontier province. Today, for example, the Afghan ambassador designate to Pakistan was apparently kidnapped in Peshawar by six gunmen. There was a skirmish, we understand, on the border between Pakistan and Afghanistan where Pakistani soldiers fired shots, warning shots, we understand, at two American helicopters that had come into Pakistani airspace from Afghanistan. And as we saw on Saturday, there could be bomb attacks, retaliatory attacks in cities like Islamabad, Lahore, Karachi, and Peshawar. So it is a movable front, and it's a crisis and a conflict happening on many levels. In terms of what is the sentiment toward American incursions, and there's now been something like a dozen American air and one ground incursion into Pakistan in the last month, there is universal condemnation of them. Many Pakistanis do not believe that their government should be involved in what they see as America's war in Afghanistan. Many Pakistanis blame the kind of carnage we saw at the Marriott Hotel on Pakistan's participation in that war, because most see it as a retaliation for the attacks by the Pakistani army and American special forces on the Taliban and Al-Qaeda in the border regions. I mean, it's no accident for most Pakistanis that the target was the Marriott Hotel, an American chain, and that many people in the hotel would have been foreigners, including Americans. And of the four foreigners killed in the blast, two, we understand, were American Marines. So I think, generally speaking, there is enormous across-the-board political hostility to Pakistan's cooperation with America, and many Pakistanis, particularly the poor, particularly those who live in the tribal areas and the borderlands between Pakistan and Afghanistan, blame Pakistan's participation, cooperation with America for the violence that is now being visited upon their country.
Can you tell us any more first about the Afghani who was kidnapped. Who was he? What's the significance of that coming at this time?
Well, I have to stress it's been unconfirmed, so I don't want to say too much. All we've heard is that the Afghan ambassador designate, Abdul Khalik Ferrara, was traveling in his car in a suburb of Peshawar, which is the main city in Pakistan's northwest frontier province, when he was abducted by six gunmen. His driver was apparently shot dead, and the government has taken repossession of his car. Now, the reason I'm not going to go more than that is because the government at the moment is not confirming that he has been abducted. But the rumors we're getting from journalists and locals in Peshawar is that he was abducted. And if so, this is another example of the kind of front line that is erupting across Pakistan. It's directed on one level as a military battle, a counterinsurgency in the tribal areas. It manifests itself in the form of suicide bombings, such as we saw in Islamabad. But also now it seems it's targeting diplomats, particularly Afghan diplomats. And you have to remember that for the Taliban, the Afghan government is very much the enemy. And this ambassador, of course, would be a representative of that government.
And yet that was part of the reason that there was so much pressure from Dick Cheney last April, right, about the increasing presence of support for the Taliban when Pakistan was starting to become more of a target by U.S. special forces and airstrikes, drone attacks. Wasn't it Dick Cheney then who talked about the new support for the Taliban that was part of the problem and one of the reasons Cheney put pressure on Musharraf originally?
Yes, and I think since Musharraf has stepped down in August, that pressure has been exerted even more on Pakistan's new civilian government. It's not only Dick Cheney. I think now there are many within the military establishment within America, and particularly I think the American commanders based in Afghanistan, who believe that the Pakistani army is not doing enough against Taliban and Al-Qaeda sanctuaries in the border areas, and they believe these sanctuaries are one of the reasons that the Taliban appears to be winning the war in Afghanistan. And there are real questions by the American establishment, including George Bush, about the loyalty of the Pakistan's premier intelligence agency, the ISI, the Inter-Services Intelligence Agency. The Americans have basically supported the Afghan and Indian allegation that the ISI were directly involved in the bombing of the Indian embassy in Kabul in July. And one of the reasons there is such distrust between Pakistan and America at the moment, and why we do see these sporadic skirmishes between American and Pakistani forces, is because there is very little intelligence shared now between U.S. forces based in Afghanistan and the Pakistani army, because the U.S. forces believe that intelligence given to the ISI is unsafe. In other words, it's used to warn the Taliban and Al-Qaeda rather than to catch them. So there is a crisis of faith. There is a crisis of relations, there is enormous pressure by the American administration, the Bush administration, on the Pakistan government, the civilian government, to crack down even harder. And many people are reading the recent incursions, aerial and one ground incursion into Pakistan, as a clear warning to the Pakistani government. And basically the Americans are saying, if you don't go after the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, then we will invade your territory and do it for you. So it is a very tense situation. And the fact we saw apparently another skirmish earlier this morning where Pakistani soldiers apparently opened fire on two American helicopters is an example of just how tense the relation is between the two armies that are supposedly allies in the American war on terror.
Where did that incident occur, Graham?
That occurred in North Waziristan, which again is another base of the Taliban and is seen as one of the entry points of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda into Afghanistan. And apparently it was a border position, an army border position there on the Afghan border, which fired at, apparently it was warning shots at two American helicopters that encroached into Pakistan airspace. And, of course, the Pakistani army at the moment is very jumpy because there have been a number of aerial strikes at so-called Taliban and al-Qaeda target. Often these airstrikes result in the death of innocent civilians, innocent tribesmen, and of course they completely undermine the Pakistani army's own counterinsurgency. It is trying to convince tribespeople that it is fighting a war on their behalf against the Taliban, that the Taliban represent a threat to Pakistan, that they are not fighting America's war. It's very difficult to convince tribesmen of that if American forces enter sovereign Pakistani territory and kill tribesmen.
You were writing a year ago that the U.S. attacks only strengthen the resolve of those individuals in Pakistan who would use violence for either political means or territorial reasons.
Yes, I think most analysts here would say that the Taliban's version of Islam has very little support in Pakistan. Most Pakistanis do not want to live in a Talibanized regime. Where the Taliban draw legitimacy is in their anti-Americanism and particularly their armed resistance to the American presence in Afghanistan. Many Pakistanis support that. They support a resistance to what they see as a foreign, belligerent, and colonial occupation of Afghanistan. So that is where the Taliban draws their legitimacy. I'll give you one little anecdote. In Bajor the last month, the army has gone after the Taliban with relentless force. For the first time, we began to see tribes turning against the Taliban, either because they no longer supported them or because they didn't believe it was worth the cost of hosting them, given the ruthlessness of the army repression. So the tribes slowly were beginning to turn against them. They were forming militias against the Taliban. All of that opposition disappeared when the American ground operation a couple of weeks ago came into South Waziristan and killed 20 Pakistani tribesmen. In other words, that invasion again cast the Taliban as defenders of Pakistan, and many tribesmen stopped their action against it. So that is why I think the army is so opposed to American incursions. One, it's a question of Pakistani sovereignty. They are the army. They believe they are sovereign in their own country. But it's also a political question. It massively undermines the battle of the Pakistani government and the Pakistani army to win the hearts and minds of tribesmen if Americans enter the tribal areas, and especially if they kill tribespeople, which is what they have done. They have also, they say, killed a number of Taliban suspects and a few al-Qaeda suspects, but they have also killed a number of men, women, and children. And there is a saying in the tribal areas that if you kill one, you enrage 100. And that is the sentiment that is very much active in Pakistan at the moment. It is ferociously anti-American.
Now, at the same time, the new leadership, President Asif Ali Zardari, and also Prime Minister Yousaf Raza Gilani, are dependent on U.S. aid, tens of billions of dollars in military support. And there is the problem that America is now talking about sending nuclear technical assistance to India, which, you know, we've seen tensions over this very question for a very long time in Pakistan. What does this new level of violence do to the power and ability of these new leaders to, you know?
Well, again, I think it undermines it. As you say, the Pakistani government and the Pakistani army is very dependent on American aid. The Americans give, on average, at least $1 billion to the Pakistani government a year, most of that military. And many analysts say they give the same amount again in covert aid, again mainly military, for the Pakistani army to carry out operations on its side of the border on America's behalf. So very simply, the Pakistani army, its level of equipment, its level of technological expertise is massively dependent on American largesse. The government, too, is very pro-American. Asif Ali Zardari was helped to power as a result of an American intervention that effectively persuaded the former president, Pervez Musharraf, to step down. So politically, Asif Ali Zardari is very dependent on American support and American legitimacy. But there is a lot of concern within the Pakistani military that America, particularly under Bush, particularly in the last year, has taken a very pro-Indian position, not only on the nuclear deal, but increasingly over India's position in Afghanistan. The Indian government has enormous influence with the Karzai government of Afghanistan. It is investing in huge economic development, and there is a perception that Bush, particularly increasingly, is beginning to adopt the Afghan-Indian discourse on Pakistan. That is, that the chief cause of the insurgency in Afghanistan are Taliban and al-Qaeda sanctuaries in the tribal areas on the Pakistani side of the border, that the ISI is playing a double game. All of this is very much the narrative of the Karzai government and the Indian regime. For a long time, when Musharraf was around, Bush basically held the middle ground. Now, the American administration seems to be adopting the Afghan and Indian agenda, and the Pakistanis are very worried about it because their view of the conflict in Afghanistan is diametrically opposed to the Afghan, Indian, and American view, it seems. They accept that there is a problem with Taliban bases on their side of the border, but they would say that the fundamental cause for the Afghan insurgency lies in Afghanistan. It lies in poor governance. It lies in warlordism. It lies in an opium crop that is funding the insurgents and against which the Karzai government is doing very, very little. And above all, it lies in the massive lack of national reconstruction, the massive lack of investment in Afghanistan that has happened since the American invasion after 9/11. They, the Pakistanis would say, are the root causes why the Taliban has come back, and that Pakistan at the moment is a useful scapegoat for that enormous policy failure by the American and NATO forces there.
What about Pakistan's economy and the effect of the current crisis in America's banking and loan industry?
Well, of course, it is a world's global economy, so there's repercussions everywhere, including Pakistan. I think particularly the increase in oil prices, the global increase in food prices, has hurt Pakistan very, very severely. This is a country in which nearly half its population of 160 million people are food insecure, according to the World Bank. In other words, they barely have enough food to live on. Nearly half of the population is poor, according to international standards. That is, they live on less than $2 a day. There is 25% inflation. There is a massive fiscal deficit and a balance of payments deficit. And it looks like that the Pakistani government, like previous governments, are going to have to go to the IMF for some kind of handout on bailout. And America's role in that, of course, is going to be huge. And we know what the IMF's recipe will be. It will be cutting subsidies on oil goods, on some food goods, and this, again, will massively hurt the poor. Some commentators are saying we could see the prospect of food riots. All commentators say that impoverishment, lack of education, illiteracy are blights that not only harm Pakistan's development as a state, but they massively give a base for support for the Taliban. The Taliban basically begins to pick up support where the state fails, where state institutions fail. And there can be no greater state failure than a government that cannot provide education, that cannot provide jobs, that cannot provide the minimum of social welfare. And the current Pakistani government cannot do that for large chunks of its population and for large chunks of its territory. And it's precisely those territories, those populations, that are most vulnerable to the allure of the simple but extreme solutions proposed by Taliban and their Islamist allies.
This attack on the Marriott being compared by Pakistani leaders to America's 9/11. Is there a prospect, do you think, for efforts to strengthen the security in the cities, even involving U.S. troops?
Well, there were a number of Pakistani political figures who likened the bombing of the Marriott to America's 9/11. I think most Pakistanis saw that as hyperbole, frankly. The Marriott was a spectacular kind of carnage, but it wasn't the worst carnage we've seen in Pakistan. A year ago, Benazir Bhutto, when she returned to Pakistan, her motorcade was attacked by two suicide bombers, and over 130 people were killed. We've seen worse suicide attacks elsewhere in the country. And as I said, in the very last month, over 700 people reportedly have been killed in the tribal areas of Pakistan. So the Marriott really was one in a sequence of very bad attacks. Its significance was that it was the worst attack that Islamabad has seen, and Islamabad is the federal capital, it's the political capital, it is where the prime minister's residence is, it's where the president is, and it's where parliament is. So as a result of that, I think we will see an increased security presence. There are already quite severe restrictions on diplomats, for example, about where they can and cannot go. But I think it's also clear there is no question of an American presence on the streets of Islamabad or any other Pakistani city, and for one simple reason. Nothing would undermine this government's legitimacy than if it were to be seen as being propped up by American firepower. Even if in practice, that is somewhat the case, if it is visibly seen on the street, it would lose all legitimacy. This government claims and is correct in saying that it has come to power as a result of a relatively free election. It represents all provinces in Pakistan. And therefore, to lean on the Americans, to have the Americans' military in its capital, would not only undermine its legitimacy, it would be a huge propaganda coup for the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and all the government's opponents, because then it could be painted accurately as an American quisling. And again, I have to repeat, 60% of Pakistanis do not want to be part of the American war in Afghanistan, as they see it. 70% of Pakistanis regard the United States as a much greater threat to Pakistani sovereignty than either to the Taliban or Al-Qaeda. That may be an incorrect perception, but it is the perception that is very dominant in Pakistan, and the government, no government, can ignore it.
And what about this idea that the real target was, in fact, members of parliament who were meeting nearby?
Today we've heard a latest revelation coming out of the inquiry into the bombing, and it does seem that the president, the prime minister, and parliamentarians and other people invited to the presidential address on Saturday were supposed to have their iftar, that is the breakfast breaking the Ramadan fast, at the Marriott Hotel. And at the last minute, the president and the prime minister changed venue, and the meal was held instead in the prime minister's residence. Now, they're not given any information about why the venue was changed, but obviously the conclusion being drawn here is that they had intelligence that the Marriott was being targeted. So I think basically what was happening is that the Marriott was a target, but it perhaps was a target because it was suspected that the political, military, and diplomatic leadership in the country may have been at the Marriott at the time of the attack. So there is speculation that, yes, the leadership was attacked, but the attackers believed that they were in the Marriott rather than in the prime ministerial residence, where actually they were at the time when the bomb went off.
Now, what were you working on as the key story in Pakistan before this bombing occurred? And finally, tell us, you know, are you able to follow the U.S. elections? Are Pakistanis still interested? Because I know there was discussion about Pakistani interest after some statements by Barack Obama about, you know, going after Al-Qaeda in Pakistan. And certainly we know what John McCain would do in the region. He's already made it pretty clear he wants to increase military presence in these regions.
Well, prior to the bombing of the Marriott, the dominant story was the crisis in relations between the United States and Pakistan, because the United States is the most important foreign backer of Pakistan, both politically, militarily, and financially. So that crisis was very much the dominant talking point, which had been fueled by the fact that in the last month we have seen an escalation in cross-border incursions by American forces, both in the air and on one occasion on the ground. That, I think, will continue. The debate following the Marriott bombing was, on the one side, the government and many other analysts were saying that the scale of the carnage, 53 people killed, demonstrates that this is Pakistan's war, that the victims are Pakistani and the perpetrators are overwhelmingly Pakistani. On the other side, the opposition was saying the choice of the Marriott, an American chain, indicates that this, we are paying, or the Pakistanis are paying the price of America's war. So I think the Marriott bombing has aggravated the divide, the polarization in the country about whether Pakistan should be or should participate in the American effort in Afghanistan. In terms of the United States presidential election, I think there is general pessimism precisely because on this issue, when it comes to Pakistan, there appears to be very little difference between McKay and Barack Obama. Obama has said that he too would send in American troops if he had actionable intelligence that Al-Qaeda or Osama bin Laden was in Pakistan territory. He would do so unilaterally. That's precisely what Bush is doing. He is carrying out Barack Obama's policy. In many ways, Barack Obama, until recently, had a much more hawkish attitude to Pakistan than McCain. McCain, up until Musharraf's resignation, was always much more the voice of moderation, saying that any incursion should be in coordination with the Pakistani government and that a unilateral incursion could cause more harm than good. It may be that McCain will change his tenor as we get closer to the presidential vote. But generally speaking, amongst Pakistan's political class, including those who see America as a friend, there is a real despair at the lack of understanding by all shades of American political understanding of how damaging American incursions are into Pakistan. The view is that for a short-term gain, such as the capture of Osama bin Laden, the capture of Zawahiri, or the capture of Mullah Omar, America is prepared to risk the destabilization of a country that has 160 million people and 60 nuclear warheads. For most Pakistani analysts, it is simply inconceivable why America would be prepared to take that risk, whether it's an America led by McCain or led by Barack Obama.
What about the significance of upcoming UN General Assembly sessions? A lot of press about McCain's running mate, Sarah Palin, getting to meet Afghan President Hamid Karzai. But Pakistan's Zarqawi is still planning to be in New York. He was supposed to have high-profile meetings with the Bush administration. That's still going forward.
Asif Ali Zardawi is definitely coming. He's flying into the United States today, I think. He does have meetings lined up with Sarah Palin, I understand, and also with George Bush. And I think he would also like to meet Barack Obama. It's very important for the new Pakistani government to make contact and touch base with whoever is the next American president and vice president. So I think Zardawi will do that. There is also an understanding here that he will use his address to the United States General Assembly to give his vision of Pakistan's role in the war against terror, as it's described in America, in the war against extremism. And most people believe he will present Pakistan as a friend of the West, presenting the war as Pakistan's war. But he will also draw the line as saying that this war cannot be fought by Pakistan if America invades its territory unilaterally. And that is the challenge facing Zardawi. On the one hand, how to appear to the West as a moderate pro-Western force that is a genuine ally in the conflict with the Taliban, at the same time as how not to appear to his people as a quisling that the Americans use when they wish to and discard when they don't wish to use him. So I think that is the balancing act he will try and pull off in the General Assembly. In the past, it was the same balancing act that President Pervez Musharraf did. But Musharraf was a military leader, and up until his last year or so had the full backing of the Bush administration, because most American administrations prefer military leaders in Pakistan to democratic government. Zardawi is a democratically elected president. He comes with a lot of baggage. A lot of Americans simply do not believe he has the weight or the power to combat an insurgency, and that is why there is a lot of pressure on him to let America do it for him and his government. He knows, Zardawi, that would be political suicide, and that is what he's got to try and convince Bush and anybody else he speaks to in New York and Washington when he's there.
Freelance journalist and writer Graham Usher in Islamabad, Pakistan, where he writes for El Ahram Weekly and Middle East Report, as well as other publications. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program produced at the studios of WHUS at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut. WHUS.org to listen live Wednesdays at 5 p.m. TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts, audio, and discussions.